Jeep gets the Cherokee in the showrooms, Nissan has a new Rogue on the road, and the SEMA show is seemingly right around the corner.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone. Your journey, our passion.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 217, for the 1st of November, 2013. Jeep Cherokee hatches some Easter eggs. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or by following the links on our website.
Scary, John.
It's Halloween, Peter.
I'm frightened.
No, you're not.
How you been?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah, I was down in Nashville this week driving the new Nissan Rogue.
How is it?
It's pretty good.
Or can't you say?
No, I can't give you driving impressions. Those are embargoed yet.
I see.
But this is the first vehicle off what Nissan and Renault are calling their Common Module Family, or CMF, which is kind of like Volkswagen's MQB.
Or, yeah, that we're trying to catch up with Volkswagen platform.
That's right. But it's a bigger vehicle, it's a better vehicle in every way, shape, and form.
That's good.
The thing that I like pointing out about it, it has a spoiler on the muffler.
Seriously. What does it do?
It's, everybody's going for more underbody aerodynamic treatment.
Yeah.
So they got little, flaps and patches here and there, but they welded on a spoiler on the trailing edge of the muffler to provide a clean separation point to reduce turbulence, which reduces drag, which improves fuel economy. So,
interesting.
I never thought I'd live to see the day when there was a spoiler on a muffler.
That's something.
How about you? You driving anything?
I just had a Bentley Flying Spur for 2 days, which was over the top, but very cool.
Yeah.
600 and some horsepower, and it's this big, massive piece of mass that is shockingly quick with that horsepower. I mean, it's amazing.
So this is the sedan version of the Continental GT, essentially, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it was nice. Very impressive.
The only thing I've never liked about that car is so much of the powertrain is out in front of the front.
Oh, yeah, so. Yeah. No, it's not a handling thing. It's just the power and the...
Oh, my God, look, it's Scott Burgess.
I'm much earlier than I was last time.
So, Scott, I'm greeting people by going, woo!
Oh, who else is late?
So, yeah, Scott Burgess is with us. Scott is in the house, and the traffic is horrific out there, right?
Yeah, and Royal Oak, there's no quick way to get here, so I took 10 mile this time. Which was better than 696.
Yeah, I bet. So I was just saying, I've been driving the Nissan Rogue this week. Peter has been in the Flying Spur.
Also, now I have a Audi S6, and it's got one of the nicest interiors I've ever seen. I mean, it's just...
That's a car that...
Fantastic.
It is a phenomenal car. And it kind of gets overlooked a lot of times, I think the S6 does.
Well, I had an S4. But this is very nice. Very nice.
What's the sticker on that?
81.
Whew. Wow. That's pricey.
Yeah.
I mean, considering what the car starts with, which is a nice car. The A6 is a nice car, but yowza.
Yeah.
What you been in, anything?
Well, I just got into a Toyota Corolla.
I haven't been in that yet. Not the new one.
What do you have? We could swap right now and I'll give you the keys.
Let's see. I've been driving this week. The Mazda 3.
It's a great little car.
The 6-speed manual, the 2-liter, that is a terrific little car. I like that car a lot. I'm going to be in the automatic with the 2.5-liter, but I've been driving the new CTS, too. And that's a great car.
Yeah, and for one day I drove the Chevy SS, which is, it's a shame that the weather's been so wet. That kind of curbs a little bit of your driving, but wow, that's a fun one. And, you know, you think about it, the price-wise, I think it was around $45,000 for what you're getting. You're getting a great car. That's quite the car.
I haven't been in one of those things. I'm not even sure I've seen one on the road. They must be pretty rare here.
We're doing the testing, and so they gave us a, I don't know how early of an edition is, but we wanted to get all the Motor Trend numbers. Mm-hmm. And so it was just sitting around today.
So it's not out yet?
No.
Well, no wonder I haven't seen them.
Which engine are you driving, the CTS, John? Six?
The six, right.
Is it rear wheel?
Rear wheel, right, but not the V-Sport.
But so
it's just your run-of-the-mill CTS.
They did a great job on it.
They did. No, it's, the Q thing, I'm not overly sold. It's not that bad, but I'm not a big fan of Q, but I am a fan of the car.
I think the things that they hyped on Q were the wrong things. The things that it does really well, I love the camera that makes the buttons big when your hand reaches up towards it. But, you know, when it came out, they talked so much about haptic touch, that feedback.
Yeah.
And that's really kind of slow and delayed. You know, it's not as quick as you would want it. And to me, the other parts of Q are really good. I think that it connects to your phone really well. The pulling in apps, you can play Pandora or you can play all of the other stuff right on the screen, and you can operate your phone basically on that big screen. Those are great features.
But that's, you know, set up and go and use it once. You know, the slider bar for the volume, I still haven't mastered that.
If you have sausage fingers, it's better because you can just roll your sausage finger on it and it works.
I did not know that.
Yes.
I was also driving the Toyota Tundra because, we had that in the studio last week with Mike Swears from Toyota. And it's real interesting. It's actually quite a good truck, but I don't know how to describe this. I don't have the right engineering terminology. All vehicles have a resonance in them. This has what I call an upper register resonance. And I call it that because if I try to imitate the sound, I have to go kind of nasal. And it does this light throttle accelerating. It's not when you're coasting or full throttle, but you hear this kind of sound. Whereas in the Chevy Silverado, which does the same thing, but it's a lower register sound. It's a sounds better than and so I like everything about the Tundra. They got to get that sound down an octave. It's amazing how, you know, it's not just the sound. It's the pitch, the octave that it's at.
I just can't get over how big the trucks are.
Oh, they're huge.
In all of them, the Ram, the Toyota, the Chevy, and
the Ford. They're massive.
I think I told you guys,
every summer in Ann Arbor, there's this classic car show. Well, somebody brought in a 1986 Ford F-250. I couldn't believe how small it looked. I mean, it almost looks like a Ranger sitting out there, but... Anyway.
My stepmother-in-law has a GMC 2500. I think it's a mid-90s. Little tiny truck. I mean, you're absolutely right. The size in which these vehicles have gotten is at the ridiculous level now.
Yeah, and yet, you know, I'm guessing they've got 50% better fuel economy than the little 80s one that I'm talking about.
Well, the engineering that goes in the trucks is just impressive as hell. I mean, when you get in these big vehicles and they drive so light on their feet, it's just like, wow.
Well, active fuel management systems. I mean, the one that GM uses, you never know when it's running on four cylinders or if it's running on eight. I mean, it's a pretty aggressive system to be on four.
Right. And eight-speed transmissions, which pretty much is, you know, the norm right now. Although, later on in the show, we'll be talking about a nine-speed transmission in the Cherokee. Because, and then what, Hyundai and I think Mercedes are working on 10-speed automatics.
Schwinn is working on that as well.
28-speed, right. So are you going to SEMA show at all?
Yes, I am.
Oh, really? You going at all, Peter?
No.
No, I'm not. But so what are you looking for?
One, I love the tire building. I mean, there's a whole building that's just dedicated to tires. The other thing I really like is to check out interiors, because so much stuff from the aftermarket becomes what the OEMs will be using 5 or 10 years from now. But stuff like the cat skin, I mean, they just do phenomenal stuff. And you want an alligator print, you know, leather interior, they can make that for you. And, you know, and for somebody that wants to work on their car a lot too, all of this stuff is the things that you can get and run and operate. And, you know, if you want a heads up display, there's a heads up display out there that you can get. If you want, I mean, the coolest stereos used to be the aftermarket stereos. When you know, that's for a lot of guys, when you're 17, that's the first thing you put in your car is a stereo. And little by little, the OEMs start absorbing those things and putting them in.
No, that's the real value. SEMA is it's got all the crazy ideas out there, and so many hardcore enthusiasts and people who are just good at wrenching, throwing everything out there.
It's a great show.
And, you know, some of it's just the dumb. My favorite stupid thing at SEMA was somebody had come up with a little attachment that you would put on your seatbelt right in front of you on your chest, so you could put your burger and fries right there and eat as you go down the road. So that's the kind of stuff I like at SEMA, the real wild and crazy stuff.
That's also the auto show that more people try to present fake media credentials to go to that
really?
Show, because it's not open to the public. It's only vendors and client customers and people like that. So, you know, and how many Jeeps and Cherokees are going to be at SEMA? Is there going to be a couple?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're either dollar vehicles or OEM-sponsored vehicles. I mean, there's so much cool stuff at SEMA.
What I like at SEMA, too, is one year I was there and somebody had this stretch F-250 that you literally had to climb a ladder to get up into. And it was like a stretch limo thing. And I talked to the guy who built it, and he was amazing. But he had thrown his entire life savings into building this vehicle.
I think I remember that. I
said, so why'd you do this? That's a huge risk. And he says, all I need is the right Ford executive to come and look at this, and they'll fall in love with it, and I'll have it made. And I thought, man, buddy, no one's ever going to come out and look at this. And this is before all the, you know, gas prices started going crazy and all that. But you've got people who are so passionately committed to this. And some of them should be committed, too.
Yeah. It was the Lord Ranchero is what he called it. And later it was renamed as the King Ranch.
So what else? What else have you guys been up to or on the lookout for?
Well, what did you think of Toyota and Consumer Reports this week?
Well, you know, I take the Consumer Reports stuff with a grain of salt. I think their evaluations of cars are really good. I think they're some of the best car testers out there at all.
They've gotten better, but they do have an agenda.
Well, they do, but I distinguish their car testing from their quality ratings. And the quality ratings are simply not scientific. No statistician worth his or her salt would buy their results at all. It's only based on subscribers to the magazine. And as I keep saying, this would be as if the New York Times polled its readers to see who's going to be the next president of the United States. Nobody would believe that poll, not even the New York Times. So for Consumer Reports to base all of its quality ratings strictly on its, you know, subscription base is crazy. And some brands dominate the bottom of the list, and they always have. So why would you subscribe to Consumer Reports, see that, and I won't mention any brand names, geez, brand X is no good, and go out and buy it? And then 3 months later go, Jesus, they're right, it is a piece of crap. So anyway, they trashed Toyota, they pulled the Camry off, because why? It didn't meet the small offset for the IIHS, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's it. They trash Ford because they say, oh, this sync system sucks. Meanwhile, 80% of everybody buying a Ford is buying it with sync and My Ford Touch. So to me, there's a real disconnect between what Consumer Reports says is the best car out there or the worst car out there and what's really going on in the marketplace.
Yeah.
I think that you still, I think for a lot of consumers and the consumers that Detroit wants to reach are
they
subscribers.
Oh, yeah. And oh, yeah, yeah. Look, I, despite everything I just said, Consumer Reports has far more influence over car buying than all the other publications put together.
Well, you know.
Well, except Motor Trend, yeah.
It's a different kind of influence. But it's one where it is tricky, and sometimes you have to just say, to hell with it. We're not going to worry about it. But, you know, I know Mulally, when he arrived at Ford, one of the first places he went was to Connecticut to see how Consumer Reports does stuff and how they can get more vehicles recommended.
Right.
Because, you know, to me, you know, I know a lot of people refer to it as like the, you know, the Bible of car shopping. And I agree with you there that it's not. I think that there's plenty of vehicles that do quite well and never do well in Consumer Reports. But I think for a lot of people, they want a starting point. So if it's not recommended by Consumer Reports, it's never considered.
Yeah. Like I said, go read Consumer Reports road tests, car evaluations. I think they're very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
It's the quality rating thing that I've got an issue with. So that's how I see it.
I don't think that's unfair.
Good. Well, look, why don't we take a break right now and get our guest. We've got Mitch Claw from Jeep Cherokee coming on the show. So, Ben, why don't we take a quick break and we'll get Mitch on.
There's only one car company in America that's never made a single car. And while you won't find Firestone cars on any showroom floor, they're out there running better, faster, stronger, longer. No, we don't build cars. But make no mistake, Firestone is a car company. So whatever you drive, drive a Firestone.
Whether it's on television, online, or through social media, AutoLine knows how to effectively get your marketing message to the people you want to reach. Contact Stacy Eamon today.
Mitch Clark, great to have you on After Hours.
Glad to be here.
Welcome, Mitch.
Thank you.
By the way, to the critics of the front end, I think it looks great.
Thank you very much.
I don't know what the problem is.
Yeah.
Well, let me start with me.
You don't like it?
I don't like the chrome rings around the slots on the nose. I saw one of them without it, and I thought that looked really good.
I think it looks great coming out on the road.
Mm-hmm. It's very distinctive. No one's going to mistake what the vehicle is.
Yeah, I think that we've had a lot of images of the vehicle out, and I think that once you see it in person, and there's different trim levels, some of it is body color. This is a Trailhawk where it's going to be a little bit more matte finish up front, but then we've got a Limited with more chrome. The different trim levels give each one of them a little bit of a distinctive look, and my observation is that some of the people that were a little bit standoffish as soon as they've seen the vehicle in person generally fall in love with it or warm up to it. And then, of course, when they drive it, it's a relationship. So,
Well, you know, and that happens even with me. You know, I'll not like something, and sometimes it takes a couple of years for me to warm up to the styling.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the shapes of vehicles with aerodynamics and CO2, I mean, we're, you know, undoubtedly a lot of us we're getting a lot more aggressive in the shape of the car. And it's changing the shape of vehicles rather quickly in this time frame, quicker than we've had in any other time frame. So it's adapting.
And you want to sell this outside of the U.S. market a lot more, right?
This vehicle is being sold all around the world, yes.
So that's part of the styling, too, is more tuned to a global taste or no?
Let's just say the basic shape of the vehicle is the same. The vehicle sold in other markets will look exactly like this. So
it's the headlights, I think, that probably are the most polarizing part of the design. You've got these very almost slit-like headlamps on the front.
That's my favorite part.
Yeah, again, I'll be honest with you, I had to warm up to it, but I really love them now, just looking at the car. And as you look at, you know, more of the newer vehicles coming out, obviously, split lamps, split function lamps are sort of becoming a little bit more in fashion, I'll say, from an aesthetics perspective. So, and it allowed us to do some things functionally with the car, too. So,
Peter, what do you like about the headlamps?
I just like, I just like the fact that the design reaches for Jeep. I mean, they could have easily done an old school front end, but I think, you know, they've got the Wrangler for that. I'm glad they took chances on this. I think it's more expressive, and I like it.
Mm-hmm. It is more expressive.
And for the people out there who have not seen the vehicle in person, you got to see the vehicle in person.
You do. Yeah. The pictures don't do it justice like it does in the sheet metal.
Mm-hmm. If you park it next to a bunch of the other compact, smaller CUVs, this is the one that you're going to remember. I mean, you're right. It's modern as opposed to most Jeeps take a more, I guess, classical approach to design. And I think that those are really smart moves. I know that it caught a lot of flack from Jeep enthusiasts, the hardcore Jeep people.
Mm-hmm.
But screw them. They're never going to buy it anyway. And Jeep needs to reach the other, 98% of the American market that's out there.
Yeah.
It's not to say that this isn't capable. I mean, I drove it in Moab, and we went up all the cliffs and down the cliffs, and it can do a lot of stuff. This is something that is going to be parked at soccer games a lot more than it's going to be in backcountry campgrounds.
Yeah. Yeah, a Jeep is all about capability. If you want it, it's there. A lot of people will, frankly, the Trailhawk, which is the one we have here today, can go just about anywhere. A lot of people that buy a Trailhawk will probably likely not go to Moab, but they likely will remember one or two instances where they had a Trailhawk.
But that curb at that Walmart.
this is what they drive to O'Reilly's to get the parts for their CJ7.
Right.
You know,
at least they don't have to get out and lock the hubs to go over the parking block.
Yeah.
Mitch, when you said that the headlamps allow you to do certain things, what did you mean by that?
Well, we have a lot of electronics, safety features back there, sensors. It allowed us to work, to sort of use the aesthetic desire of the styling groups to our advantage and package some of the front electronics in the car. I mean, we've got probably the most amount of active safety features in a vehicle in this segment, certainly in North America. So it allowed us to do a lot of things behind the scenes. I'll leave it at that. But the vehicle also will be sold in markets where it's got a lot more sensors than in the North American version. So it allowed us to do one shape vehicle for pretty much the whole world.
Can you talk a little bit about the powertrain and how you can disengage the rear axle so you have a front-wheel drive setup for a four-wheel drive vehicle?
Yeah, this one, every time I say it, people think that I must have misspoke, but this is a very innovative all-wheel drive or four-wheel drive system. All three of our systems have a complete disconnect at both the front and the back.
Why? I've never heard of that.
Well, it completely eliminates any spin loss.
Gas mileage.
Yeah, it's all about CO2.
Has anyone else done this? I say I've never heard about it. But
no, not to our knowledge, not a front-wheel drive-based all-wheel drive system. No.
Wow. And you mentioned three all-wheel drive systems.
Yeah.
I know Jeep's had that. Grand Cherokee's had that. Mm-hmm. Is there really that much demand for three separate systems?
Well, depending upon the vehicle, I mean, the Cherokee is really four different models, the Sport, the Latitude, the Limited, and the Trailhawk. The Trailhawk gets the most sophisticated system. It's a two-speed system with a complete rear locker, similar you find on the most astute off-road vehicles, and you get a chance to enjoy that. The next system down is a two-speed system without the rear locker. All the systems, by the way, have a complete disconnect at the front and back. So on a Trailhawk, you're not losing anything either when you're tooling around town. It's still an on-demand system when you're in normal driving.
That's where it's like an all-wheel drive system.
That's correct. And then the base system, which is a single-speed system, would be probably most like what you'd find on the vehicles that are considered to be its competitors. I won't use their names, but let's just say that ours is that the base system would be most like that. But again, unlike them, we disconnect at the front and the back. And then we do some interesting things with the clutch system, where if you get that system and you're in sport mode, you can actually overspeed the rear axle and you can have a little fun. The vehicle feels like, frankly, a rear-wheel drive vehicle if you want to have some fun. So we're really, that system, we really talk up because we spent a lot of time developing that system and a lot of work went into it, and we're really quite proud of it.
Man, so, I mean, that's got to be a challenge even for the dealers to have. I mean, because a lot of the salespeople just don't have that kind of product knowledge. It's got to be a challenge to sell. How to sell the right all-wheel drive system to the customer?
The most expensive one is what you want to sell.
That's always the best choice, yes. It's only $2 more a month in your payment, right?
Yeah, it might be, it likely will, you know, the first vehicles are showing up at dealerships, and our dealers have been going through a lot of training. This vehicle is not a vehicle, it's a family of vehicles, so we want to try to make sure that a person ends up in the right Cherokee when they leave, because you can pretty much get all four models in either the four or the six cylinder. So you can, it's a very a la carte vehicle, and then the three different all-wheel drive systems. So we really have done a lot with the dealer body to make sure that they tailor what the customer really wants to the Cherokee that they leave with. So.
And speaking of three different all-wheel drive systems, I was reading you have a 35-to-1 crawl ratio. What's that?
It's actually a 48. We have a 48-to-1 crawl ratio on the six-cylinder, and we have a 52-to-1 crawl ratio on the four-cylinder. And what that is Scott was at Moab, and a 50-to-1 crawl ratio is what you experience when you're you don't know what that's worth until you're trying to go up a driveway that's ice covered, that's like this, or probably some of the rocks that you were on out at Moab. That crawl ratio just lets you just creep right up, you know, right up the side of a mountain, frankly, like a billy goat when you need it. Or if you're in, you know, trailer mode and you're trying to get out of a stiff, trying to get your boat up a ramp, as an example, that ratio will also, that two speed. If you got one of the three systems that have the two-speed system, that crawl ratio would be, you know, really instrumental in making you do things that no other vehicle can do. So that gives you an incredible tractive force.
You guys also have kind of a non-traditional model with the engines, where you can get a four-cylinder in the Trailhawk, and you can move those around that way, which is, it seems like it's... I don't know if it's offering a consumer too much, or is it, you know, the previous tradition, it was always the four-cylinder was your base, and then you slowly went up in engine size. But what's the thinking on that? Why do you want to have all of those different varieties, and will that make it, I don't know, too complicated for a consumer?
Well, again, because the vehicle is going to be sold around the world, there's a lot of markets that don't see a lot of benefit in all-wheel drive. I'll just say it. It allows us to offer also, with the research we've done, a customer a chance to sort of a la carte the vehicle. We typically, because of the trend in industry, was to some degree to minimize complexity, narrow options, and basically try to make it less complex for the consumer. Our market research on this vehicle has been more to that the customer would like to be able to decide. If they want a front-wheel drive-based vehicle, they don't want to be immediately told they're going to have a four-cylinder. If they want a six-cylinder, we offer it to them. So we offer more options than, frankly, we've ever done on most other vehicles before. We think it's going to pay off because people do end up frustrated that they can't get the combinations that they want. We feel that we will not provide that excuse with the way we've lined the car up.
This replaces the Liberty, right?
It does.
Or at least what was in the U.S. market called Liberty.
That's
correct. Always called it Cherokee in the rest of the world. It's been a long time since I was in a Liberty. Seems to me this is a far more capable vehicle.
It's 40% better fuel economy. It's I can't give you the... We have an internal trail rating standard. I'll say that the vehicle is at least as astute on the trail. Its capabilities from the electronics side, from active safety, I mean, it's obviously well beyond the old Liberty. Nothing against the Liberty, but we've got a lot of fuel economy things we had to meet that the old Liberty did not, and a lot of consumer electronics and features that have been updated in the vehicle to basically make sure we're competitive. And in the case of the Cherokee, we had desired to lead the segment. We invented this segment, and we've been out of it for a little while. So we wanted to make a very strong statement coming back to really take back the segment. So.
You struggled to get this vehicle out, though. There, you know, there's been delays and all that. That's all behind you now?
Yes. We've been shipping for a few weeks to dealers, and I think just seeing them at dealers on the way here, in fact. So, yeah, they're showing up.
What was the biggest reason for the delays?
Well, I think it's been said, our boss, even as early as yesterday, just getting all the calibrations right, getting the... Frankly, the transmission and the all-wheel drive system to work together. So the way we do things now, we don't release cars until they're right, and they weren't right. They weren't meeting our expectations yet, so we decided not to ship. We took a lot of heat for it, but the way we run now, we don't bow to pressure. We don't ship until we're ready.
I heard it was more than the transmission, though.
I don't know where you got that, but
okay.
No, I'd say that it's been, I think we've described the transmission as being one of the, of course, it's a revolutionary transmission for us and our partner. And it took a lot of calibration work just to get it exactly the way we all wanted it.
And when I drove them, the transmission was rough. That was the one thing that they said. This was in July, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and we talked about that, and it was, the calibrations weren't good. If you remember, like, remember when the Lambdas first came out, the GM vehicles with that six-speed, and that transmission was all over the place, that if you did aggressive driving, it didn't respond very well. There was some of that in the Cherokee. And when you drive a pre-production vehicle, I mean, that was something that they're like, this will be fixed before it comes out. I was not aware at the time it was going to be quite as long as it took to fix it. But, hey, man, I applaud anybody that holds release in a vehicle. You get to launch it once.
That's correct. That's the way we think of it. You only have one shot at it. So, no, the transmission now, I think we're going to leave one with you, John.
Can't wait to drive it either.
I'll let you judge.
Just the transmission.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say, just I'll leave you a transmission for your desk.
It's on your desk right now.
No, it's wonderful, especially versus the vehicles in its segment. It's a far cry, likely, from the vehicle you experience at Moab, just due to all the work we've done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like the one in Moab. I mean, there was one when... capability is always the worry with the Jeep folks. And really, that was not my concern. I really wanted to see on the road how it handled, really how it's going to be used. Because I think that, you know, the one thing the Liberty always did was the Liberty was the one vehicle that seemed to attract more women to Jeep than anything else. And I think that this has that same potential, which it never hurts to bring in new people into a brand.
Yeah, back to the question of getting the 9-speed to work with all three all-wheel drive systems and in all conditions, and then quickly adapt to, you know, from highway to an off-road. I mean, there was a lot of work that had to go on with the calibration guys. We honestly believe we're at where we always wanted to be, and that's why we finally released the cars.
And so, if I remember correctly, the base model or the three tiers of all-wheel drive systems, the base tier system, there's no rear locker on that.
That's correct. Only the Trailhawk has a rear locker.
And is that mechanical or electronic or?
It's a wet clutch. It's sort of a traditional rear locker. Okay. That part of it is more like what you'd find on a Grand Cherokee.
So there's no low.
There is a
on point. The base model.
No, there is not. The base model is more like it's a single speed system, and then the two ascending levels, including the one on the Trailhawk, which has a complete rear locker, are two-speed systems. So,
you mentioned a 4 and a 6. I got to believe for export markets, diesel is somewhere in there.
I don't think we've announced it
you can do
yet.
That right here on Autoline After Hours.
I can? Yeah. Well,
they said a diesel's coming.
Yeah, so.
Okay.
They're showing up in two European countries as we speak for sale. So, yeah, there is a diesel. It's a wonderful diesel that we work with our colleagues on. And that will be offered in the rest of the world.
What diesels do they put on the Wrangler overseas?
It's
got to be VM Motori.
It's a VM 2.8. I believe it's the 2.8 VM. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, so that's a VM diesel. The current one. Yep. Sorry.
Where is this going to be manufactured, or where is it manufactured?
Toledo, Ohio, USA. We have two massive plants
there, right?
As most people don't know that. Toledo North and Toledo South, one plant builds nothing but Wranglers and is extremely busy building nothing but Wranglers around the clock. And then right next door at South, we build this, and they're building a lot of them right now.
So, Mitch, what other programs have you worked on? I mean, you're the VLE for this, right?
I'm the vehicle line executive for this. I have all midsize, so I have C and D segment vehicles, so the Dart and some other vehicles that you'll be seeing soon.
CUDA.
Pardon?
CUDA.
No, rear-wheel drive-based vehicles is where I used to work. I was the chief engineer of the 300, where I think you might remember me, and I'm not sure who else. I think I met you there. So I have a lot of car-based experience, and then I worked on the Ram truck for quite some time, and minivan. So I've been around a little bit, but for the last 5 years, I've been really working on C&D segment vehicles. This vehicle, before I was a vehicle line executive, I was the global architecture line executive for C&D segment for Chrysler Fiat. So I worked on the platform architecture of this vehicle, so I know a lot about it. The bones of the vehicle was what I was responsible for. So I'm really quite proud of it.
So that's very interesting. C&D, to go from Dart to Cherokee, sure, they're segment size very similar, but very distinct cars, too.
Yeah. Well, I heard you talking earlier about platform sharing and architectures. Everybody's doing it. You've got to be very selective on what parts and systems you put as part of each genealogy family of each vehicle. There's parts on a Dart that are not on a Cherokee, and then there's other members of the family that are going to come out that will be unique again to their own little genealogy family. We do an assessment of whether or not you don't want to carry added off-road mass in a front suspension for a Cherokee in a Dart. That you'll find that there are parts that you just for efficiency don't carry over, but you carry over the way that the suspensions are designed and built, put together in the assembly plant and things like that. So that's where in a lot of cases the real cost benefit is it allows us then to maybe cross load vehicles back and forth, and that's where the second benefit is, not just the part sharing, but designing the vehicles to be processed the same way.
Yeah, that's got to save a boatload of effort when different types of cars go down the line the same way, same workstations applying the same sort of thing.
Yeah, that's the end game for us. It's just efficiency and flexibility. If this vehicle takes off, and I think it will, we have the versatility of building this at other plants, and the same with some of its the other vehicles in the family. So similar to our competitors. That's what you're seeing a lot of.
How much does it weigh?
It's about test weight class, it's about a 3850 to 4500 test weight classes. It spans quite a range from the base vehicle all the way up to the Trailhawk, almost 4 test weight classes. Because we have the off-road version, it doesn't really compete with anything else in the segment. So that off-road capability with that would be typically heavier than most other vehicles in its segment. But we, again, with technology, you know, with the 9-speed and the parasitic improvements we made in the all-wheel drive system, we offset that mass with efficiency.
And it's a tiger, shark, lion, giraffe engine on the 4-cylinder, right? I mean, I know it's a number of animals and reptiles involved in the name.
I don't name them. It is.
But it's multi-air.
It's a codenamed Tiger Shark. It's a 2.4 multi-air. It's the same basic engine that launched on the new Dart, and so you'll see a lot of this engine. We're very very excited about this engine. It's got a very good, nice torque curve. Very good for CO2. Very good for emissions. So it's a workhorse engine. You'll see a lot of.
You mentioned CO2. Jeep is one brand that I wonder 10 years from now, when all of this CAFE stuff has kicked in, how are you going to be dealing with that? I mean, you obviously need to be dealing with that right now.
Yeah. Well, there's an analogy I use. Prior to last year in automotive, regulatory-wise, we had to improve about 1% per year. Starting last year, we, in automotive, have to improve almost 5% per year. So what you're going to probably see is propulsion systems and vehicle changes more rapid than what you've seen in the past. You probably have already figured that out. So this vehicle is extremely fuel efficient right now and for the foreseeable future. We're already working on improvements to that a few years down the road. And I would hazard to guess my competitors are too. We're doing it all.
Everyone's pulling their hair out.
Yeah, everybody. we all have to live to the same standard, and we're all working, let's say, harder than we ever worked for both improvements to the vehicle demand and the propulsion system demand.
So. Yeah. Hey, look, why don't we get into some of the questions that we've got
sure.
coming in for the audience right now. It's time to get to rapid fire. Ben, let's let that run. Okay, Mitch, VRM Chris says, do you see an SRT version of the Cherokee in the near future?
No comment.
Ooh, good question, VRM Chris. Mitch W. says, please do not let Peter go home without explaining what he wrote this week about Tesla's latest crash and burn video.
Oh.
Well, you know, I've got moles throughout the business, and one mole reported in. He happened to work on the Volt and then subsequently worked on, helped on that other manufacturer. And,
Tesla.
And,
call it brand T.
Yeah, and, you know, that old rust bucket obsolete company of ragtag engineers working on the Volt came to the deduction that, you know, if this gets in a wreck, we really don't want batteries to get
lithium ion
penetrated or anything happen to them. So they wrapped them three times. Could have wrapped them once, could have wrapped them twice. They wrapped them three times. Tesla batteries are wrapped apparently once. So they've had a couple incidents. I would think they were going to rethink that.
Yeah. The two accidents, the one in Mexico especially, was pretty horrific. Nonetheless, very interesting what you brought out there.
Well, that's like protecting the family jewels. You don't want the batteries to be upset. You know, it's bad enough to be in a wreck, but you don't want major catastrophic things happening.
Well, after a second car caught fire, I'm sure the stock went up again.
You are wrong, sir. Okay, Mitch, back to you. Dr. Botox wants to know, are typical Jeep buyers wary of electronic systems? Don't they favor mechanical systems they might be able to fix MacGyver style out on the trail?
Oh, yeah, that goes, I think, partially to the diehard Jeep people that we know and love. I used to own a Cherokee, and I used to pull levers. I got over it, and I am embracing what is called by some technology. What we had to do is, in a lot of cases, we couldn't use a lot of these mechanical systems, primarily because of how we need to engage them into the new driveline systems. They're cumbersome, they're heavy, and they just weren't efficient. And that's just a statement of fact based upon what we've been dealt in terms of regulatory stuff. So we've, in updating that, yeah, we've gone to, in some cases, you're pushing a button versus pulling a hard lever. You don't have to get out of your vehicle to unlock an axle.
That's why Jeep people had kids.
Yeah.
Go lock the hubs.
Now, there still are Jeeps that we sell that have a traditional mechanical lock, and some of those, like Wrangler, are the most capable vehicle in the world. The big brother, as we call it, to Cherokee and Grand Cherokee. So those systems will retain some of those features for the foreseeable future, primarily because of the extra torque and capability that those vehicles have. And some, you know, down the road, you might eventually start to see some of evolution of even some of those vehicles. But never give up on the capability. Jeep does not have any plans to give up on capability.
Yeah, you back off that. Kiss the brand. You know, goodbye.
No, it's not even in a, you can't even think it.
So. Well, I mean, if you put it head to head, this versus a 20-year-old Cherokee, you know, with all of those little mechanical bits and pieces and things, which one is going to fare better?
Well, I might get in trouble with my brand for drawing any, because we've never actually done that direct comparison. We do have some old Cherokees that we've done side-by-sides, but there are some other things. Over time, the hill descent type features that you probably had a chance to, there are some things you just simply couldn't do in the old Cherokee that you can now do that you even as the best off-road driver, some of the electronics in some scenarios, such as extremely steep rock surfaces that might have moisture on them, with the hill ascent and hill descent, there's, you know, the interaction you have with the electronics in the vehicle, it's smarter at the wheel than you are at your hand and at your foot. And I'll just leave it at that.
And the quality of the build.
Yeah.
Not to take anything away from a 20-year-old Cherokee, but...
Well, you know, yeah. I mean, come on, time marches on.
Yeah.
I mean, I love it. It's just like getting an old muscle car. Awesome, but you know, they don't steer and they don't stop. I mean, we've kind of come a long way.
Yeah, right.
So, you know,
that's right.
It's nice to appreciate older Jeeps and everything, but you can't fight the electronic thing going on in modern day vehicles. You just can't.
Hey, we got a phone call here. Ben, let's bring that one in.
Hi, this is Jeff Leischek from Albany, New York. My question for your guest is, with the Jeep Cherokee, why did you decide to go with the lever for the transmission as opposed to the rotary knob like in the Dodge Ram? I've test driven a Dodge Ram with the rotary knob, and I think it works really well. Thanks. Bye.
Oh, that's a good question. So as the industry is moving to more fully electronic transmissions, what he's asking is, this the type of rotary knob. We've, depending upon the type of vehicle and the transmission we're mating it to, and the type of vehicle, the customer base, there are some segments that expect one type versus another. We could have done a rotary knob. The Jeep Cherokee customers and the people that we surveyed that want to buy this vehicle, they did not prefer a rotary knob. That is not to say that other segments would not have a very high preference for rotary knobs. So we do it. You'll see that we have done it different by segment, and then going forward, you'll continue to see us do it different by segment, where we give we really want to make sure that we don't put a piece of hardware that might be good for a Ram truck customer into a Cherokee customer or even a car customer. We do very, very specific research to those customers in those segments.
Got to keep those brands separate.
That's part of it, but in the end, it's really the voice of the customer stuff we do in all of our clinics. You get a very different type of person in certain, like a Ram truck. They're very, you know, space for them. Space is very important, and when you're faced with putting, options of transmission engagement in a Ram truck, rotary knob ends up, if you think about it just for space, it ends up being very practical, very efficient.
A lot of real estate right here.
Yeah. Yeah. Our customers wanted this, and they said, we really don't want the park brake, the mechanical park brake, so we did an electronic park brake.
Oh, interesting.
So we freed all that space up for the extra storage in the console.
How am I going to do them handbrake turns now? That's not easy with the pedal and the electronic ones. Anyway, you don't have to answer that. Don B. says, I saw Autoline's review of the Cherokee, and they mentioned Easter eggs hidden around the vehicle. What are Easter eggs, he says?
Easter eggs are little styling cues that are little surprises that our product design office, our passionate guys in the Jeep studio, hid all around the vehicle. And the expectation is as you own the vehicle and explore the vehicle, piece by piece by piece, you'll see these little Easter eggs. And I guess one example is just in the front of the vehicle. If you just look at the front frit line, you look very, very closely, and you see a little little Jeep, Willie's Jeep, right in the what it looks like in the frit. And you have to stare, and then all of a sudden you realize it's there. Some people will probably own the vehicle for weeks and weeks before they actually stare at it and see it. Now, beyond that, I'm asked not to reveal any more Easter eggs. The rest is supposed to be a
surprise.
Cool.
I love that. I think that's really cool. On the Grand Cherokee, as I remember, there's the little Jeep icon in the headlamps, right?
Yeah.
So I'll have to. And how many Easter eggs are there?
I'm not allowed to say.
You're not even.
No, Mark Allen would kill me. No, I
there's one.
No, actually, I thought I had found them all, and he and his one of his styling lead guys I work with have informed me I've not found them all. So they were able to release something into the car that I didn't know about. So they're that good.
Okay, Peter, this goes to you. Noah Rogers wants to know, what new car should I get? A 2013 Mustang 5-liter with Brembo, $31,000. Or a 2013 ATS 2-liter turbo with Brembo brakes at $31,000. Both are offering 3 to 4,000 in cash back right now because the 2014s are out.
He wrote me. I wrote him back.
Oh, you did, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I like both vehicles. I mean, it's just...
Two different beasts.
I mean, you're either committed to the V8 or you're not. And if you're not, that ATS package is really good.
Yeah.
But sometimes you just got to have a V8.
Scott, what would you do? Mustang 5-liter?
If you're ever going to have anybody ATS? In the back seat, then get the Caddy.
Yeah.
If you're never going to have anybody in the back seat,
get the Mustang.
Get the Mustang.
That's a great way to look at it. Okay, back to Mitch. Let's see. We got all kinds of questions here. Where was the one I was looking at? He says, what's the differences with the Trailhawk Edition? Is it really off-road capable?
It's extremely off-road capable.
It is. I would agree completely.
For those of you who don't know who Moab is, it's out in Utah. It is the most arduous off-road course. People from all over the world go there. From all over the world, even bring their sport utilities in to say that they've made it up the Rubicon Trail. So Jeep uses that very heavily, and we've reproduced parts of that at our own proving grounds to make sure that when we go to Moab, we're ready. This vehicle does very well on the Rubicon Trail.
And just to answer these questions, Remen Koch says, does the Trailhawk label replace the old Trail Rated badge?
No. In fact, the Trailhawk is the trim level of the vehicle, and the Trail Rated badge is retained on the side of the vehicle.
I could see that from here, but I wanted you to answer the question.
Yeah. Trailhawk is the only one that has tow hooks, too, right?
That's correct. Front and rear, yeah. So it's.
We've got another phone call here. Ben, let's bring that one in, too.
Hey, John. Peter, love the show. Again, Peter, I always read your blog, and I wanted to let you know I commented, I sent you a comment about the impending doom of racing. What I wanted to ask your guests, how is Jeep going to get re-involved in motorsports? You know, Jeep is considered a quintessential off-road vehicle, but yet there's no participation in the Best of the West, or I believe Score is still around. or even the stadium racing. They're doing a lot out here in California. So I was wondering, is it just the racing just for the Dodge brand, the Ram brand, excuse me, or just or is there some room for Jeep to get involved? And I appreciate your show, and great job, John, Sean, and everybody else at Autoline, and thanks a lot.
Cool. Thanks for the call. And yeah, what about Jeep and Motorsports?
It's a tough question because I can only tell you he accurately reflects what Jeep is currently involved in. They're involved in a lot of other things, as you probably know. A lot of things more having to do with outdoor and jamboree and real trail events. I can't speculate what the brand is going to decide to get into going forward.
Would you like to see the Cherokee in like the Baja 500, Baja 1000?
I'd say the vehicle has a lot of incredible capability. Jeep is selective in terms of where they want to go. They're with their reputation and how we design the vehicles for people that really like occasional or a lot of outdoors and a lot of capability. They're very, very strategic. They stick to their compass. That's all I'll say.
Speaking of the compass, we got another question here that says, I know you're the Cherokee guru, but as a Jeep guy, do you think products like the Compass damage the brand's image?
I think the Compass has a place. It's an entry level Jeep, and I think that's the way we've described the vehicle. It's a more cost effective version of a Jeep. It's for certain people. It's your first Jeep in some cases.
I think the current Compass is fine. I think the problem the Compass undergoes is it took them a bunch of iterations
to get it right.
To get it right, and now I think that lineup's fine, but. Hmm.
It's been a long time since I've been in a Compass, too.
Yeah, I cut myself right here on a Compass and on the, I think it was the armrest from an old Compass.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was the old Compass.
Let's see. Autoline fan says, does the 9-speed start out in second gear like the old Mercedes used to, unless you floored it? And if it starts out in first, does it actually cycle through all 9 gears if you casually accelerate up to highway speed?
To answer the first question, yes, you use first gear, absolutely. Can you get all 9 gears? Yes, you can. Ninth gear is, you got to be in the right road conditions. Most people won't typically get in ninth gear, but I've gotten in ninth gear several times, depending upon how you're driving and where you're driving. Higher speeds and in elevations. Mountain roads out west where you're going up, really steep grades and going down steep grades, you have no problem getting into ninth gear.
Bradley G says, I went to my favorite dealership yesterday. They had just received the new Cherokee. It looks much better in person than in photos. Are there any plans for an optional manual transmission?
No comment.
Good question, it's Bradley.
It's a great question, but we're not offering one this year in North America. I'll leave it at that.
Overseas, is there one, a manual?
I believe it's already out that the vehicles that we're shipping to Europe have a manual, yeah.
With a diesel manual?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay, this is not Cherokee-related. It's BMW i3-related. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll throw this out to Peter and Scott. Jason from St. Paul says, is it true that the range extender on the BMW i3 will only work for an extra 100 miles before you have to stop and recharge, unlike a Volt where you can drive on the range extender as long as you have gas in the tank?
Range extender works with gas in the tank, but it's a really small tank. I think it's a 2-gallon.
2.4 gallon.
Yeah, and so it is only another 100 miles that you get.
See, I like the i3 as a pure electric urban car because it weighs 2,700 pounds. Mm-hmm. And I got to believe it feels really good to drive handling-wise. So I get it. You'd want a range extender, but I'd just look at it as an electric urban car.
Yeah. The range extender adds about $4,000 to the price.
And 300 pounds.
And 300 pounds, exactly right. And to Scott's point, it will double the range of, you know, the battery, they're saying 80 to 100 miles. With the range extender, you can double that. But to your point, Scott, it's a dinky little gas tank.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why it only goes an extra 80 to 100 miles. Okay, yeah. Chip has got a camera right now, and he's going to show the Easter egg that we were talking about earlier. And let's see, can he get it focused?
Yeah, there it is.
And what did you call that piece?
We call it the frit, which is it's the blackout portion of the glass at the bottom that most people ask, why do you black that out?
The frit, F-R-I-T?
Yeah, is what I think most automotive companies call it, frit. It's the blackened portion that usually seats the urethane bead.
Yeah.
Yeah. There we go.
Oh, there. I see it.
See
it? Oh, my God, that is cool.
It's a Willys Jeep.
This is at what? In the middle of the base, part of the windshield.
Yeah, it's right in the middle of the windshield, right down at the base. It's not, you know, if you look, you're down angle, you're not looking
exactly,
at it.
That is very clever.
Yeah,
it's very
kudos to your design staff.
I'll pass that along.
Awesome.
Kudos to the true believers out there in Auburn Hills.
Right.
And beyond that, I can't tell you where the rest of the Easter eggs are. You have to buy the vehicle.
And we don't even know how many. So even if we find them all, we don't know if we actually did.
I found four, and I've been informed there's more than that. I think they're just messing with me, but...
Well, that's cool. Chip, yeah. Thanks for doing that.
Thanks,
that really helped. Hey, look, it's the top of the hour. I guess we should all get home because there's kids out Easter egg. Halloween trick-or-treating tonight. Yeah. So
thanks for coming on this.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
This is cool.
Nice seeing you guys. Thank you.
Like the vehicle a lot, and best of luck with it.
Thank you. Yeah. We're really proud of it. Thank you.
Cool. Scotty, glad you made it, man.
Yeah, and I didn't hit any trick-or-treaters on the way here. I mean, I was careful. I'll try not to hit any on the way home.
I just hosed a few out of my grill when I got home.
So anything we should be looking that you got coming in Motor Trend? You want to promo anything you got?
Next week they announce the car of the year.
Ooh.
And so...
How do you handle that announcement? What do you guys do?
They are going on... I think Fox and Friends. Ed Lowe will go to New York City. They'll have the car there, and then they'll be on the news he does a whole satellite media tour, and then they're going to a couple other spots. I think one of them includes the place where they make it.
Oh. Bowling Green? He's just laughing, folks, so we'll know next week. But thanks for the tip. I didn't know that the announcement was coming next week. And Peter.
Just keeping it going.
Okay, folks. Thanks for having stopped in, and hope to see you next week, too.
See you next time.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone. Your journey, our passion.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily news fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.